Just over 1 minute to the bell, and we want to introduce our panel here. We have Ryan Dietrich, LPL Financial Chief Market Strategist, along with Samir Samana, Wells Fargo Institute, Senior Global Market Strategist. And before we get to the bell, let's check the markets here where we have a rally underway. We got the Dow up about 0.2% of a percent, the S&P 500 up just a little bit less, the NASDAQ up over 0.5%, and the Russell 2000, as Ines Ferre was just pointing out, up over 2.5%. And we are looking for potentially record closes in the S&P 500, the NASDAQ Composite, the NASDAQ 100, and the Dow Industrials. And by the way, the Dow Transport. So going to be really interesting to track this price action. And then looking at the sector action, we do have consumer discretionary that is still in the lead. Energy taking a close second, up 1.7%. And then healthcare and tech. Those are the only two sectors in the red. And here is your first closing bell on Wall Street for the month of November. And there is that gavel. All right. Oh, well, yeah, we do have record closes for the Dow, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ. And Ryan, I want to get your take on this. We haven't been able to say that for a long time. Some people say strength begets strength, but then other people, they climb that wall of worry and then they're just worried. What should we do here?
Well, that's right, Jared. You know, the day after we all went out for Halloween, ate our kids' candy, and markets made new highs, right? 60th new high of the year for the S&P 500. But now we're in November. We just had that really good October. Think about it, Jared. November is actually the best month of the year. And here's the kicker. When you're up 20% for the year heading into the normally bullish month of November, November has been higher 8 out of 8 times since 1950, and the returns actually get stronger. And this last 2 months of the year actually gets stronger. So the truth is strength begets strength. And like you guys talked about earlier, that small cap leadership, we're optimistic small caps are going to take that baton. That's just going to continue this overall bullish cycle, and things still look good here.
And Samir, let me get your take on what you expect for the rest of the year. We're just talking about seasonality, but we have a lot of other factors in play here. We got earnings, big Fed decision in 2 days. What's on your radar?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'll zoom out even a little bit more than Ryan from the standpoint of, you know, look, from November through April, right? That's the best 6 month stretch for equity markets, you know, pretty much throughout the year. So we think that better days are ahead. You know, earnings are still growing at a pretty healthy clip. There's a lot of people focusing on peak growth rates. That's probably not the right way to look at it. What you should be looking at is, are they growing at a pretty healthy growth rate? And we would say, yes, they are. You know, there is event risk out there. You know, you could have the debt ceiling, the Fed, et cetera, et cetera. We would view those, if they cause pullbacks, to be buying opportunities. We just had one in October, and look how it's played out so far. We're back at new highs. So, you know, really from our standpoint, those low interest rates, still stimulative policy, and really strong growth are what set the stage for strong equities into next year.
And Ryan, we were talking about the small caps, Russell 2000, on the verge, the precipice of a breakout. I'm not saying that it happened today, but it's a nail biter. And this small caps have lagged for a long time. I've talked to a lot of people about the small cap space, and it's not homogeneous. You have different classes of companies. And one of the things that distinguishes them is the strength of their balance sheet. And heading into a rising interest rate environment, companies have to be able to pay off their debt. You don't want to be stuck with a bunch of zombie companies when the Fed is going full tilt on raising rates. So how do you break down the small cap sector and maybe the larger investment world? Where are you putting your clients right now? Or where are you looking for opportunities?
Yeah, well, just keep it simple with small caps. That's a good point there on higher rates. Potentially could impact some of them, but there's a lot of banks and financials that are in small caps, right? So we know higher rates, that tends to support that group. Don't forget also, Jared, I know you didn't. A year ago in the fourth quarter, Russell 2000 gained 25%, an all-time record. For almost 10 months now, small caps have gone virtually sideways. We think that's perfectly fine, right? Consolidating those gains, now likely going to break out early in an economic cycle of growth. We like small caps, so we're overweight that group. We still like cyclical value. We've been coming on with you for a long time saying, you know, your industrials, financials, materials, energy, those groups are groups early in a cycle of growth, higher rates, a little higher inflation regime. Those are the areas we want to be invested in, and we're overweight those for our nearly 20,000 LPL advisors.
And Samir, I'll kick this to you. What do you like right now in stocks?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of the same. You know, we've stuck with small caps all year. We like energy, we like financials, we like industrials, and we like comm services. So, you know, at least right now, if the, you know, economic winds continue to kind of blow fairly hot like they have, and COVID, which seems to be kind of falling off the market's radar as a driver. A lot of the stocks you were talking about have to do with the reopening, right? When you look at the airlines and what they're doing today, that is starting to indicate that we might be through much of the healthcare crisis piece of this whole thing. And if that's the case, you really should see, much more breadth, and small caps are probably the biggest beneficiaries.
And Samir, I want to stick with you here and get your views on inflation. We've seen them not become so transitory as was once thought. And at what point do we potentially reach a breaking point where the Fed must act right away?
So for equity investors, inflation north of 2% is actually a good thing. Really, it's not until you get north of 3, 3.5 that it's a problem. What you get between kind of 2 and 3 is a lot more pricing power for a lot more companies. And so from that standpoint, we haven't had this in some time, which is why we had such a narrow market in 2018 and 2019. It's one of the things that's actually allowing companies to do better. You mentioned small caps and how a lot of them aren't making money. Well, these levels of inflation will allow a lot more of them to have the pricing power that gets them back into the black.
And Ryan, let me get your thoughts on inflation here.
Yeah, we're in the transitory camp too. I think we all learned the word transitory, and it doesn't mean 3 months. It might be more like 9 to 12 months. But look at what the core PCE was on Friday, right? 3.6% year over year. Still a pretty high number, but it's not as high as the CPI data and some other ones. Why does that matter? Because that's the Fed's favorite measure of inflation. Anxious to see what the Fed has to say, but the Fed has made it very clear. We're going to keep rates low. We're going to continue to expand the balance sheet. Yes, tapering is coming, but those historically are tailwinds for equities and for investors in general. So we're not ignoring inflation. But again, market wouldn't be making new highs if it was truly worried about inflation, is our opinion. At the end of the day, the market is what really matters. And that still looks pretty good to us.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the market, Samir. We talked about some of the headwinds and tailwinds. I'm just wondering, what's the biggest thing on your radar right now that could shift your view of the market, maybe change your investment thesis?
So probably call it the Fed and interest rates, right? So if Fed policy were to shift in a way that had rates start to go up kind of in a disorderly way, I'll go back to Q1 of this year. That's probably a pretty good example, right? When the 10-year kind of doubled, pretty quickly from around November through, February, March. If you had something where the Fed got a lot more hawkish, right? A lot of people are bringing forward rate hikes. You've seen the 2-year jump from almost nothing to almost 50-something basis points. If that continues and you have interest rates put a little bit of a damper on the economy, that could lead to a pullback. Again, it would be one that we would probably buy, but that's probably what we're watching most closely, is the pace of change in interest rates.
Well, we have some breaking news here. We have Avis Budget Group earnings, and we want to bring in Ines Ferre for us. What's behind the report?
Yeah, Jared, it's a beat on the top and on the bottom line, with revenue coming in at $3 billion. The street had a consensus estimate of $2.73 billion. Also, its third quarter adjusted earnings per share coming in at $10.74. That's quite a beat from what the street was expecting, an estimate of $7.24. We're looking at the stock in after hours that's trading higher, up about 2%. Keep in mind, this stock since July has increased 125%. Year to date, the stock is up more than 360%. Some analysts have been asking, has the stock gone too far, too fast? But nevertheless, it's up in after hours after a beat on the top and the bottom line, Jared.
And Samir, this is a stock up, as Ines said, over 350% year to date, and really just outperforming its peers in such a huge way. I'm just wondering, what are you taking out of this potential earnings report, or just in a larger sense, what this stock has done?
I mean, what we take away is that, when people have the opportunity to consume, when people have the opportunity to travel, they're getting in on doing it. And just anecdotally, I mean, been to a restaurant in the last couple of days and it was just completely packed. So I think what it's telling you is we're kind of early cycle. Things are going in the right direction. Interest rates are still low. You've got central bankers that are still very stimulative. And, those that are still worrying about whether there's, a bigger pullback out there are probably missing the boat.
Well, we have some more breaking news, another earnings report. Dan Holley is here with NXP earnings. Dan? Might be muted, Dan. Well, we don't seem to have Dan, so let me go. Dan, we swear you're muted, but if we have to, we can go back to our panel. Much better. We got you. Go.
Sorry about that. Yeah, we have NXP earnings. They beat on the top line. They came in with $2.9 billion in revenue compared to $2.85 billion EPS of $1.91. And looking forward, they have estimates between $2.93 and $3.08 billion in revenue for Q4. The street was estimating $2.9 billion, obviously doing very well despite the chip shortage that's ongoing at NXP, obviously a maker of automotive chips as well as chips for the telecommunications and industrial applications industries.
And thank you for that update, Dan. And Ryan, I want to go back to you. I know you don't talk individual stocks, but semiconductors in general. We just had the SOX, that's the Philly Semiconductor Index, hit a fresh record high. I think it's the first that we've seen in a month, maybe longer. And this is a group that really didn't accelerate the way value stocks did. They kind of got a lift off a few weeks ago. But we've seen individual performers like NVIDIA, AMD hit record highs. What's your take on the chip space right now?
Yeah, from a purely, you know, technical momentum point of view, you have to like it. Look at semiconductors versus software, all right? Just last week, that broke out on a relative strength basis. So some more leadership from the cyclical area in technology is a good thing. And again, you know, close at an all-time high, close at a weekly high, close at a monthly high, semis did last month. So all these things, again, we get the headlines, we get the scary headlines and all the issues that are out there with the supply chains. But what is the market telling us? When you see semiconductors outperforming software, that's a sign that cyclicality is coming back after, you know, time it really didn't for a while. So again, those are the positive things we see heading into 2022 here.